for the last number of years, I've been looking at the issue of the legacy of war. So we filmed in Libya, Syria, Afghanistan, and this year Somalia. We actually tried to film in Yemen, but we were unable to get permits or visas to go into Yemen, which is tightly controlled by Saudi Arabia. So unfortunately, we didn't get to Yemen. But Somalia is a really interesting case in the sense that it has been without a government now for about 16 years. The state itself is in a state of disintegration. It continues to suffer attacks from Al-Shabaab, which is the Al-Qaeda-linked organization that has really destabilized and upended the country. And yet, the surprising thing about it is how little coverage it gets. And I was really struck by that in particular when in October 2017, a suicide bomber in a truck full of explosives, triggered his own death. And in the process, triggered the death of almost 600 people. 587 people, to be precise. It was the biggest bomb in all of Africa, in the history of Africa. It was the biggest single casualty. And the carnage was just incredible to watch it. The local television station was right beside where the bomb went off. And in fact, the doors of the television station blew open. Some people within the television station were injured. One person was killed. But they still managed to get out onto the street and they managed to film the aftermath of it. And one young journalist, a young man in his late 20s, he took us through what happened on that fateful day. And one of the things he said was, and it's sometimes the details on these things that's really striking, that he could barely hear for hours afterwards. Such was the impact of the bomb, just from the shock and the sound of the bomb, that he could barely hear. So he went out with colleagues onto the streets. And as you can imagine, there is utter chaos. There's mayhem. There's a sense of disbelief. There's a sense of shock, horror at what has unfolded on the streets. And then people begin to look for relatives and they begin to look for family members. And people are crawling out of the dust and crawling from under the debris. People screaming, looking for help. There's blood everywhere. I mean, I don't want to get too graphic about it, but it was one of these really, really shocking events. And sometimes my sense is when we report on these events, we report on them as headline events. So, you know, a bomb goes off in Africa today, an estimated 600 people were killed, and then you go on to the next item. We forget to stop and pause and think about the actuality of that horror as it unfolds, almost on a minute-by-minute basis. And I think it's only at that level that we begin to realize what war does. And we begin to get some comprehension, not a complete comprehension, some comprehension of the utter horror of war and all that goes into making war, all the whole arms industry, the failure of diplomacy, the failure of politics, that all of these things converge into this moment of horror. And of course, it's ordinary people, school kids, people going to work, people doing their shopping, going to the markets and so on. These are the people who suffer from these awful, awful atrocities. So,
and do you think... I was just going to say, I mean, do you think it's our relative distance from such an event that, you know, allows us to just report it as a headline event and not really tell those on the ground horrific stories that are affecting people and their daily lives?
Yeah, I mean, obviously this is speculation on my part, but one of the things I'm really intrigued by is the extent to which we will cover air accidents, for example, no matter where they take place. So, and I was really struck by this a couple of years ago in the Democratic Republic of the Congo, the DRC. I remember watching the RTE news one night, and about five items in, there was a plane crash and 40 people lost their lives. And of course, 40 people to lose their lives is an awful tragedy for the families involved. But at the same time, millions of people, possibly up to 4 million people, have lost their lives throughout the conflict in the DRC. It's probably got the biggest casualty. I think it actually has the highest casualty rate of any conflict anywhere in the world since the Second World War. And that story isn't known. But a plane crashes is. And the same has happened recently with a plane crash. And unfortunately, an Irish man who worked for the World Food Programme, I think it was, lost his life in that. And it does raise the question, so why do we cover a plane crash in which 40 people lose their lives and not cover an event where 4 million people lose their lives? Why do we not remember what happened in Mogadishu in 2017? And my guess is, if you compare that to what happened in Sri Lanka recently and the level of coverage that has got and how that will remain in people's consciousness. And of course, this is speculation on my part, but I think one of the reasons is that when it comes to plane crashes, it's people like us fly on planes, so we can identify with them. For the most part, white people, not exclusively, obviously, but for the most part, white people, or middle-class people, or people who can afford to fly. So we can identify with those. And so we will record their deaths. But if it's the poor of the world, we won't. And if you go to Sri Lanka, it was really interesting. I was listening to some coverage on the radio the day after, and they brought in a tourist expert. So there is this utter shocking terror attack in Sri Lanka, and a tourist expert is brought in to talk about the impact of it on tourism, because now Western people are increasingly going to Sri Lanka. But of course, Western people don't go to Mogadishu. They don't go to Somalia. So if 600 people are killed there, then we don't need to give it as much attention, because it's not a place we're likely to go to. It's not a place that we can identify with very much. So we see global events through the prism of A, middle class people, B, Western people, and C, Western interests. And I'm talking about that in a geopolitical sense. We don't see it through the eyes of the poor of the world, who are the ultimate victims. And therefore, it gets relegated. And I think that's the really shocking thing about what happened in Mogadishu, was the way in which this particular story got relegated, wasn't told, wasn't remembered. And before I went to Mogadishu, and people would say to me, you know, friends and family and neighbors say, you know, where are you going next and what are you doing? I said, well, actually, I'm going to Mogadishu because we're going to tell this story. And invariably people said, gosh, I never heard that. And that's really, why haven't we heard it? It's not the fault of the people who haven't heard it. It's the fault of those of us who have access to the media are not telling that particular story.
That's, I guess, where you come in, and you're willing to go out there and you want to tell these stories. Like, you want to tell the stories of the people whose stories aren't being told.
Yeah, and I'm lucky to be able to do that, and I'm lucky that people are prepared to fund that, and I don't take that lightly. We have a crowdfunding model that enables us to do that. So we obviously get money from RTE, and there are people within RTE who have been really committed to this series over the 12 series that we've been doing this, and we get money from Irish Aid as well, and that's really important. But outside of those two, we have a crowdfunding model that I think this year we have about 60 different funders, and they're drawn from cross-denominational religious congregations, the NGO sector, and the trade union movement as well. So we have this kind of broad-based and eclectic funding stream, and they allow us to do this work. And I think as well, on their part, there's a recognition that these kinds of legacy stories need to be told, and we need to be able to bring these to an Irish audience. So it's not just, we'd say that I'm willing to do it, but I think there are people willing to fund it. And the other thing it's really important to mention as well is that I've got really good colleagues who are willing to travel with me to places like this, which to some extent are, you know, there's a degree of risk involved in going to Mogadishu or in Kabul or Aleppo or wherever it is. And we've just come back recently from Baghdad. So there is a degree of risk. And people, you know, I'm talking about cameramen, directors, sound people, and other fixers and so on that help us. I might be the front of house person. But there is a degree of commitment by a whole range of people, be it funders or crew members, to undertake this work.